This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasan with Kusu Chuang and Noel Lim in studio this morning. It is 7.36 a.m. Still not entirely used to not waking up at 5 a.m. and coming to work. But all the more, I'm quite happy to see the sun rising over the hills over there.
Oh, but I am actually. I am like you. Love to sleep. So, yeah, this is fantastic.
How about you, Noel?
Yes, I hope this will be the new normal for us post-MCO.
Post-MCO. Now, while we're talking about the MCO, though, we've got the papers in front of us. And I've got the NST reading the front page, containment. I think this is talking about how Masjid India has been put under the enhanced MCO right now. And they'll be seeing more stricter measures being taken to contain the area, and also that MCO violators to be charged no more compounds. I was reading this yesterday, how I think starting with in the third phase, we will be seeing the less 1,000 ringgit compounds or no 1,000 ringgit compounds, and going back to charging people in court because they feel they've seen not enough. Some people haven't been taking it seriously, and to those people who think that 1,000 ringgit is not a big deal, I have to ask how and why.
Of course, it's a big deal from all levels of society, right? Because everything, all activity slows down. You don't get to go out. You don't get to enjoy life. You don't get to consume, and that's the bedrock of the economy.
Yeah, so Masjid India is the fifth location put under the EMCO. And then we've also got Kluang and Johor, the Hulu Langat, Jalan Munshi Abdullah, which is also in KL. And then, Masjid India is the fourth place put under EMCO. And the surrounding area is considered the fifth area. This is according to the NST.
Yeah, so Harian Metro also has something on the same headline, jail time if you flout the rules, and Masjid India, and also new clusters in Seremban. And they also point to this picture here of groups of people queuing up to get into a factory. I think this is where it's their workplace. And definitely no social distancing is happening here. You know, people are standing so close to each other. And in terms of the business news, the Malaysian Reserve, they have this piece here on billions of revenue losses seen as April retail sales to shrink 60% from a year ago. And this is retail sales in April. So this is a forecast by the Retail Group Malaysia that often tracks on a month-to-month basis retail sales. And so that's, I guess that's to be given. Like, the question is, what's the percentage? And their estimate is 60%. And the second piece here, implementation of stimulus is on track, according to Tengku Zafrul, our Minister of Finance. He says the vast majority of households and individuals who are eligible for funds have received their money. And so I think the other packages are on track.
So while we're talking about packages, Noel, you'll be speaking to GDX, actually, GD Express, a little later. Theon Teck Lien, will tell us a bit about what you think this conversation is going to be like.
Well, I think we're going to explore this thing about they are essentially a very large company. I think market cap about close to about 1 billion ringgit. And so they are one of the big names in express delivery. And so really to get the feel on the ground, what's it like for a businessman who's been running this business for 20 years? He bought into this company in year 2000. But really, also, what is his big concern? And I think there may be a discussion on, is there going to be a financial crisis as companies struggle to pay off their loans after this MCO is over?
That's very interesting. That's happening at 8 a.m. as usual, as the Breakfast Grill is still taking place at 8 a.m. there. So be sure to tune in to that. Chuang, I see you're very interested in the papers you have in front of you. Tell us, what are you reading?
So I've got the business pages of both Edge and The Star in front of me. And yesterday, the IMF had their World Economic Outlook report for April 2020. They launched it yesterday, so all the press were there. I think the headline number is really the fact that they think that unemployment this year is going to be up to about 4.9%, which I think would make it a record, because the highest it's ever been was back in 1990 when it hit 4.5%. And Malaysia has been coasting along all these years with full employment. Full employment, according to The Economist, is around about, 3%? 2.5%, 3%? That's the definition. So 4.9% will be the headline number, and that will ease back to 3.4% next year. And obviously, that's not good. Ye Kim Leng, the Sanway University economics professor, he reckons that a lot of people, such as students, retirees, housewives, are likely to lose interest in seeking jobs because they've been staying home and they've been getting used to the way of life at home. And don't forget that, remember last year, the previous government had the initiatives to get housewives and women back to the workforce, fresh graduates back to the workforce. All those initiatives really on the back burner right now. The second item, which is interesting, is something which I raised with West Sports yesterday with Ruben Dhanalingam, which is basically share buybacks. This is what companies do. The financially healthy companies with extra cash in the balance sheets will be using some of that money to buy back some of the stock, some of the shares, which have been under pressure recently. So some of the companies that, according to the Star Biz, they suggest that Fajar Baru, Berjaya Corp, IGB, Randhill, SEG, SEGI, Glomec, Tropicana, Mitrojaya, TRC Synergy, they've all been buying back recently. Berjaya has been buying back between 22 and 23 cents. Randhill has been buying back starting at about 95 cents. So I guess we'll see more of these happening as the market gets weaker.
And so we've got a Twitter poll running right now. Would you invest in the Malaysian stock market at this point? The answers you have, yes, no, not not time yet. Prefer overseas markets and I don't gamble. And currently, no, not time yet is leading the poll with 46% of the vote and yes with 24% of the vote. In fact, at about 9:30, in about 2 hours, we'll be talking about Malaysian markets, specifically with Vincent Koo, head of research at UOB Kay Hian Malaysia. And we'll be trying to get his thoughts on where he thinks the local market will be heading and perhaps if there are any opportunities there. So that's something you may want to pay attention to as well. I've got the Sina Harian in front of me, and they're highlighting basically ASEAN Corporation. The headline reading, Persefahaman ASEAN Perangi Wabak COVID-19. I think this is a call for a more coordinated effort in the region to deal with COVID-19. ASEAN has always been one of those areas that hasn't always had the best record when it comes to working together, and the fragmentation there is quite apparent. So I think the Prime Minister is calling for ASEAN nations to come together and fight this together. And especially considering the fact that the situation in Indonesia and Philippines could get much worse based on just preliminary forecasts and measures at this point.
Yeah, so, speaking about that, right, I think we're going to be talking more about creating a joint fund together. I think ASEAN has, like the countries in ASEAN, I think they've always, on the surface, look like they are working together, and it's always they have this kind of policy where they don't intervene in each other's domestic issues. But I think with this COVID-19, obviously, you cannot just sit there and just expect your neighbours to do a good job, right? I think it will come a time where maybe Malaysia or Singapore will have to help Indonesia with fighting this COVID-19, when I think their death rate is about 9%, which is way above the global average.
Yeah, access to healthcare, of course. So people like the doctors in America going on YouTube to say that basically the fatality rate has been inching up from 1.5% to nearly 2%, and over 2%, because the healthcare system, under pressure as it is, because there's not enough beds. So basically fatalities are rising because there's a paucity of supply of hospital beds. Page 6 of the Star, discussing Maybank's position in the corporate hemisphere because of the COVID-19, saying that the gross loan contraction is likely at 1%. And their net profit forecast, according to the analysts, is going to be cut by between 1% and 4%, that's CGS, CIMB. No surprises, because nobody's borrowing money. There's no economic activity.
Yeah, I've got another interesting headline here. But this is on page 11 of the New Straits Times. Subtitle, Logistical Nightmare. MCO Extension Disrupts Court Trial Dates. And this is something that I think will have its implications, right? Because courts are always packed and you've always got court dates set, let's say, for next week or the week after. So if the MCO has disrupted the trials that were already ongoing and they've got to be pushed forward, our hospitals are packed, but so are our courts.
Yes. Speaking about courts, the most high-profile case will be the 1MDB case, right? And that's it's unfortunate that there's any further postponement to it.
Yeah, and how this how the breaks will play into especially if it's in the middle of a case, how that plays into, you're going to have to refresh witnesses, you're going to have to maybe refresh the people involved in what's actually going on, especially after, as it is with everything going on, this break may not be the best logistically for courts.
Yeah. Of course. So, yeah. Justice delayed is justice denied, as they say in legal circles. Okay, some personnel changes at in corporate Malaysia. IOI Properties CEO Lee Yao Sing, who's actually the son of the demised founder, rest in peace, is now the company's executive vice chairman effective April 15. And I think he is also the spouse of our former energy minister, YB Yobian. The other personnel changes that this chap called Dato' Ong Chu Ming, is now the single largest shareholder of RubberX with a 31.33% stake. He's a 41-year-old businessman, currently the executive director of Hextar Global, which is involved in agrochemicals. So he's now the big owner of RubberX, which is one of the smallest producers, but still one of the sectors very much in vogue because of the COVID-19.
All right, on that note, we're going into a few messages. And when we come back, we'll be talking about what ASEAN could proposals to handle ASEAN post-COVID-19. 1MDB, a few headlines from there, and the US and WHO. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with me, Roshan, Chuang and Noel. And we've got a poll running on Twitter right now. Would you invest in the Malaysian stock market now? Right now, leading the poll is no, not yet, with 46% of the vote. 22% say yes, 11% saying prefer overseas markets, and 21% say I don't gamble. Whether that's wise or not, we'll find out later at 9:30 when we speak to Vincent Koo of UOB Kay Hian. Now, in the meantime, we're discussing ASEAN. ASEAN is looking at a proposal from Thailand to create a joint fund to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic. The proposal was made by Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha yesterday at a special ASEAN Plus 3 summit on COVID-19, which was held virtually. The Plus 3 referring to China, Japan and South Korea.
So I think it makes sense. I think what ASEAN's looking to do is to reallocate some of their existing funds to put into this new joint fund. And I think it's really meant to facilitate the fight against COVID-19 in some of the various countries. I think they're looking at technical and financial support. And clearly some countries appear to really need them, right? So I think just looking at Indonesia, for example, the death rate is about now 9%. They have about just about 4,300 cases COVID-19, but over 370 people have died. And I think same in the Philippines, I think death rate is also about 5%. I think, reading some news reports, it appears that big countries like Philippines, Indonesia, their healthcare system is being severely taxed right now.
Okay, well, Malaysia has also chimed in. They've proposed that ASEAN formulate an economic recovery plan, which focuses on not only the financial aspects, but also on social safety nets, food security, education. And of course, this comes from the Prime Minister's office. They said that this plan should contain measures to ensure a robust supply chain for the region's 600 million people. And that includes a smooth flow of medical supplies, food, essential goods, and critical infrastructure to meet the smooth flow of trade, whether by air, land and sea.
Yeah, so I think ASEAN countries have been trying to work together, right? But the question is this just going to be lip service or, would they actually put money where their mouth is?
So I've got the NST in front of me, page 12, which is basically showing an illustration of global COVID-19 cases. Malaysia is at number 8 with 4,987 and 82 deaths. Philippines at 4,932 with 315 deaths. That's almost four times the amount of deaths and almost the same number of cases. Thailand at 2,613 with 41 deaths. And Indonesia has 4,500 cases about there with 400 deaths. I think that's about five times the death rate that we are facing here. So again, illustrating that the bigger countries with also a lack of medical support there face a much bigger hurdle here. So how can ASEAN come together to help this out? And so far, after the summit, South Korean President Moon Jae-in said his country would secure additional financing through pre-existing channels such as the ASEAN Republic of the ASEAN Republic of Korea Corporation Fund, the Asian Development Bank Trust, and the money pooled at the so-called Asian Plus 3 level, ASEAN Plus 3 level with China and Japan. And Japanese leader Shinzo Abe said he has proposed setting up an Asian Infectious Disease Response Center and that all participating countries had agreed without elaborating. The question is, logistically, how does that even work, a regional Infectious Disease Response Center?
I think, for example, if I'm just using Singapore as an example. If it gets its, everything under control domestically, it may send out doctors, for example, to some of these, countries that need them, that need their help.
How? On what aeroplanes?
Some special flight, Chuang. How Malaysia Airlines run rescue flights now.
I'm not dissing what it just.
They can take a boat too.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where political leaders get together, right? And they say a lot of politically expedient nice things, right? And there's a lot of lip service. Do you know what I mean? I think the more immediate thing is personal protective equipment for frontliners, right? I mean, we're weeks away from coming to an end of supply. This is low-hanging fruit, right, which can and should be deployed rather than talk big, highfalutin ideas, which, as you say, could even be lip service, Noel.
Wasn't it yesterday, Noel, you were talking about how some of the bigger countries are basically outbidding ASEAN or Asian countries for
yes,
PPE?
Yes, I think that's why it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense now for some Asian countries to just get together and so that they can pool their resources to buy equipment and compete with the US and Europe. But I think proof is in the pudding. We just have to wait and see whether this is what they will really do. But, you know, that it also makes sense to help your neighbours because you are kind of dependent on them, right, in terms of trade and in terms of even supply of labour.
Yeah, so the top 10 ASEAN countries have reported at least 20,000 COVID-19 cases in total at this point, but the number is likely to be higher given the lack of testing capability in some areas, including Philippines and Indonesia. And these include the region, of course, includes Singapore, ourselves, Malaysia, and Malaysia have imposed measures to restrict movement of residents. And moving on, while we're on ASEAN, let's talk about news involving Malaysia and the infamous 1MDB. It's been a while since we've talked about this. The US Department of Justice, the DOJ, said yesterday that it had repatriated another $300 million US to Malaysia from the misappropriated 1MDB funds that it recovered. So a bit of money coming to the coffers here.
Yeah, so my immediate reaction is that, oh, wow, we could do with this money.
Absolutely.
And redirect them all to the Ministry of Health.
That buys a lot of PPE, right?
Yes. Yeah, so I think the Justice Department last year said that it had recovered $1 billion US in assets associated with this terrible scandal. And so the funds were originally scheduled to be returned in February, but I think there was some delay due to technical issues, which hopefully have been sorted.
I wonder what's going to happen with that lawsuit we've threatened Goldman Sachs with. Remember, Goldman Sachs wanted to give us back, I don't know, $1 billion or something. And then Tun Mahathir said, sorry. And then they apologized. And then he said, sorry, no cure, right? Maybe she want to sue them for the full whack, right? I wonder what that's going to happen with that.
Chuang, wasn't it with you when then Finance Minister Lim Kuan Yew talked about this on the Breakfast Grill?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that feels like ages ago.
I know, right?
Yes,
like
but they're
lifetime.
No longer running
yeah,
the show,
yeah, they're no longer
right?
running the show. But that was when there was a lot of news broke out from that Malaysian government would be taking at that point action against Goldman Sachs. But speaking of this, the Straits of 1MDB, the Straits Times carried a piece last week on problems faced by the current Malaysian government to recover 1MDB funds. According to sources cited in the article, part of the problem stems from missteps by the previous government, the government that we were just talking about, that left negotiations with the US DOJ, the government of Abu Dhabi, and Goldman Sachs in varying stages of limbo. And God knows what the political change has done there as well. I mean, as it is, and COVID-19 to add on top of that. So in some cases, talks have broken down because of the lack of goodwill between parties, according to financial executives and local and foreign lawyers involved in various aspects of the recovery process. This was the Straits Times article.
Yesterday, when we spoke to Fitch, and one of the things that he talked about is commitment to reforms, right? And I see commitment to reform is how are you going to pursue this 1MDB case? Are we going to be sufficiently as committed as the previous government in trying to seek justice, right, and to put whoever is responsible for it in jail or, you know, have that necessary penalty. So I wonder whether this current government will be as committed, bearing in mind that UMNO is one of its key parties.
It was a line in the Fitch statement that I read that they were keeping an eye on the cases themselves, but we'll see how much that factors in the longer run and how these things play out. Right now, earlier this morning, news broke that President Donald Trump, I think during his daily briefing, said he had instructed his administration to temporarily halt funding to the World Health Organization, WHO, for taking China's claims about the coronavirus at face value and failing to share information about the pandemic as it's spread. Now, President Trump said the WHO failed in its basic duty and must be held accountable. I wonder if he's trying to divert some of the blame here in lieu of the fact that the economy has suffered here.
Yesterday, Donald Trump had his most amazing tirade against the media. Did you guys watch it? It was incredible.
Isn't that like everyday affair?
Yeah, but apparently he reached new levels of of ridiculousness. He escalated it. Okay, so I think that there is some credence to criticism of the WHO in terms of their funding that they draw from China, and their definition of how China has dealt with the virus. There's some criticism there. But a lot of criticism should be leveled at Donald Trump as well, because he was widely criticized for being too late to address the COVID-19 issue. And most of February was lost. And that's the centerpiece of the media's questions against him yesterday, which he then deemed to be fake and ridiculous and disgraceful, quote unquote.
And that lies the problem here, right? It's not just Donald Trump that anytime something is deemed unfavorable, it's now fake news.
Yeah.
Which is it's not so much the way he talks to reporters, it's the way he puts them aside and basically ostracizes them when it doesn't conform with his view.
He hasn't reserved that for just the media because he's also swatted aside individual state governors. Like, for example, he's just gone and said that he's got absolute authority to call an end to the lockdown, which is, of course, not true because, as we just heard on the news at BFM at 7:30, Mayor Andrew Cuomo of New York City saying, that's not true. I mean, who is he? He's not King Trump. He's President Trump.
Correct. Yes, so I think Dr. Anthony Fauci has also been on the firing line. I think even Trump had tweeted to say fire Fauci, and Fauci is the top infectious disease expert now who's been seems to be the voice of reason talking about the fight against COVID-19 in the US.
Yeah, so it's right now, it's according to the, it's unclear if when any halts in payments could take effect. And the US has contributed about $893 million to WHO's operations during its current two-year funding cycle, according to the WHO numbers. And this could be severely impactful to the running of WHO. And it's just overall, I mean, how he's going to fight with the governors about this is interesting because the U.S. is the governor is essentially the president of that state, and him proclaiming something like this can't be in line with what Republicans believe in as well. So I don't know what's happening there at this point. But right now we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, you'll be listening to The Breakfast Grill. Well, Noel Lim will be speaking to Tiong Tek Lien, of GD Express, to get his views of logistics and maybe how he thinks the financial situation will play out in the longer run. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.